frankly, I think that is probably starting to become the only way that brands can survive in a world where the cost of acquiring customers through paid marketing has gone through the roof. It's the brands that are figuring out longevity. It's the brands that are figuring out repeat purchase and lifetime value.
Welcome to the Milk Bottle Shopify e-commerce podcast, brought to you by Milk Bottle Labs, officially Ireland's top-rated Shopify experts. Milk Bottle Labs build, upgrade, and market Shopify stores all over the world. If you're not happy with your current platform, Milk Bottle will migrate your online business to the Shopify and Shopify Plus platforms with zero interruption. This podcast is supported by Rewind.io, the leading backup solution for your Shopify store, available in the Shopify App Store. Thanks for listening. Now over to your host, Keith Matthews.
Hey folks, welcome back to the Milk Bottle Shopify e-commerce podcast. Greetings again from Dublin for episode 9. Today I interview Reza, the founder of Shoelace. Shoelace is a Shopify-only retargeting service and application, which helps Shopify store owners get more value out of their remarketing spend and create a more memorable experience for their customers. So let's have a listen. So Reza, thank you very, very much for taking the time to join us today. I read that did you go to university in Montreal?
I did. I'm based in Toronto, actually. So I grew up in Montreal and I moved to Toronto about 5 years ago, and that's where we're based now.
Yeah, I was there last year for Unite. It's very much, obviously, it's one of the major cities in Canada, but it's also very much driven by Shopify. It's the tech capital, isn't it?
Yeah. I mean, Shopify has had a huge impact. I mean, Shopify has a presence, you know, their headquarters is in Ottawa. They have a huge presence in Toronto. They also have some presence in Montreal as well. They've had a huge impact on the tech ecosystem in Canada for sure.
And Reza, does that present a challenge to you then as a startup to hire staff and expand and get real estate? Is there more of an advantage or disadvantage to actually being located where all of the other tech startups are?
I think it's more of an advantage. I think, you know, when you look at a city like Toronto, it's definitely, you know, a hub of sorts, just like on a world scale. But compared to places like San Francisco or New York, it's still not as crowded as those sorts of cities. So I think we kind of get the benefit of pretty good tech hub, but also not as much as I think in those cities, there are members of teams who like stay at companies for like a year, 18 months, and they're just like going to the next new startup, et cetera. And it's like hard to build long lasting talent. I've heard Toby at Shopify talk about this at length, where like, you know, part of their strategic decision to be based in a place like Ottawa is like, they want to be able to grow a company where members of the team are staying there for like 10 years and stuff like that. And we definitely see that happening in Canada. And I think for us, I don't see a huge sort of difficulty in terms of attracting talent, because at this point, it's kind of a different environment. So if you join a 30-something person startup like Shoelace versus a 4,000 person company like Shopify, like, you know, it's just a different vibe. And I think there are people who are interested in joining companies at different stages of their life cycle. And so we definitely attract the people who are, you know, drawn to wanting to being there from the ground and just kind of getting the thrill of building something from nothing. And so yeah, I think there's a lot of talented folks here and enough for a lot of different kind of companies to grow and find their differentiation.
Yeah, the great thing about Shopify, of course, in Toronto or in Canada in general, is it's resulting in kind of spin-off startups like yourselves. So I'm assuming that actually creates a lot of variety in Toronto, which then gives prospective employees then a nice kind of a choice where the e-commerce ecosystem might be, where Shopify mightn't be that attractive. There's always a good opportunity to join a decent startup like your own.
Yeah, exactly. And I think we're always so impressed by the ecosystem that Shopify has built. So like there was a member of the Shopify team who was just like visiting our office a couple of weeks ago. And I remember we were just like sitting there chatting and like looking around our office, looking around all of our team members and being like, because Shoelace is still kind of Shopify only. So our entire customer base are still Shopify merchants. And so like when you look at the number of businesses that have spawned off of the ecosystem that Shopify has built, it's sort of a phenomenal thing. Like you look at the kind of tech companies or the agency partners or just like freelance consultants that are building their businesses on Shopify, and like obviously not to mention the merchants that are building their e-commerce brands on Shopify. And it's very interesting that it's like a very central part to their vision, where they talk about this idea of, you know, taking the path that leads to more entrepreneurs, which is a cool way to look at the world. And yeah, so it's interesting that there is this ecosystem that has spawned off a lot of businesses that are benefiting from the ecosystem that Shopify has helped kick off.
Yeah, there's no doubt about it. And it's very enjoyable when you hear Toby talk about it, because his visions and his plans that he probably had in his head 10 years ago, they seem to be kind of organically coming into fruition when you have a guy like, you know, me representing an agency in Dublin, talking to a partner like yourself, and both of us earning a living off the back of Toby's vision. So yeah, I second you on everything you said there. It's something quite exciting about it. Reza, the first thing I want to ask you about Shoelace is, where did the name come from? Because I think it's absolutely, if there was a vote for the best named app, I think you guys would be very close to getting the gong. So where did the name come from?
Yeah, thanks. It's a very good question. We get it often. Tiny little bit of history. So this goes into a little bit into how Shoelace got started. So we were three founders, myself, David, and Alex. We are three co-founders of Shoelace, and we met at a startup in Toronto. We were working closely together there for about a year. And then at some point we decided that we wanted to start our own company. Didn't really have a particular idea or anything that we wanted to build, but we just felt that the three of us made the right ingredients of a founding team. And we wanted to be able to throw, you know, 10 hours or more per day, just working on stuff to see if we're able to find something that we're interested enough in kind of solving over long term. And so in the early days of that, and first maybe like month and a half, there was a lot of ideation around, you know, what we wanted to work on, what we wanted to build. And the idea immediately before what, you know, Shoelace has then kind of become was this idea that we wanted to help businesses who shared a similar audience but didn't compete with each other. We wanted to help them cross promote by leveraging each other's kind of audiences. So, you know, business A would help promote business B and vice versa, and they would kind of drive each other traffic, stuff like that. And one of the mechanisms that we thought we might do this was kind of a cross retargeting sort of deal, where when somebody buys a product from business A, they'll start to see a retargeting ad for business B and vice versa. And so, yeah, we're very much kind of considering this approach of how to enable businesses to effectively cross market, cross promote with each other. In the digital age, it felt like there's not very many good solutions to facilitate that. And that was like the beginning of our idea. And so Shoelace, the name, represented this idea of, like, if you look at a shoelace tied up on a shoe, you see this sort of crisscross pattern. So you see like the crisscross of a shoelace cross-marketing campaign was kind of the inside joke there. But, you know, in addition to that, I read something interesting, and if I can remember it, maybe I can share it with you and you can add it to the show notes later. But there was this blog post that I had read that talked about, you know, what goes into a really great name. And there was a bunch of things, like it should pass the telephone test. So if somebody picks up the phone and wants to tell their friend about your product or your brand, they should be able to just say the word and not spend a few seconds saying, wait, what was the company? How do you spell it? Like having that awkward back and forth. So it needs to be able to pass the telephone test, so that, you know, it's easy to recommend, it's easy to have people talk about it, et cetera. It should be short, it should be memorable, it should be spelled correctly, all of those sorts of things. And so because Shoelace fit a lot of those things, and we just loved the name so much, as our idea evolved to be, you know, not a cross-marketing platform, but a product that helps brands do journey retargeting, we decided to stick with the name. And so some days we think about reverse engineering the story to say, you know, Shoelace helps, it makes retargeting as easy as tying your shoes, or, you know, yeah. It ties your marketing journey, ties it all together as like a shoelace word or something like that. But the true story is the one around the different product idea that we had in the early days, and just falling in love with the name and keeping it.
Yeah, I have to say, it certainly passes the telephone test. We get a lot of people asking us about our name. A slightly longer story, as it's an agricultural story. That's how we came about our name. But certainly, telephone test, it's an interesting way to test the reaction that people will give to it. It's interesting you mentioned that you came up with the idea, but you actually started with the people. So whereas a lot of startups, one person or two people will have an idea, and then they decide to execute on the idea. You did it a different way. You knew the people that you actually wanted to work with in the future, And would it be correct to say that you chose, or you chose each other because you knew you could make something successful rather than a specific idea successful?
Yeah, it's exactly right. Like, you know, there's all these sayings that say like ideas are a dime a dozen. It's the team that's everything. It's execution that's everything. And, you know, we very much subscribe to those ideas and we were like, okay, if all of those are true, why don't we put it to the test between the three of us? Like two of us were developers and we could build whatever we wanted. And we had enough like curiosity and opinions about the way the world should be that, you know, we felt that we would have no shortage of ideas that we would be fascinated to work on. And then the only missing piece was to like free up enough time in the day to be able to just work on stuff and ideate to see if we can find something interesting. We were also huge fans of Paul Graham's writings from the founder of Y Combinator. And he has a lot of writings around how to come up with startup ideas and how to get startups off the ground. And a couple of those that we adopted a lot was this idea that, you know, just work on stuff, just build things and see where that goes. Because to get too caught up in the idea phase of what if this existed or what if we do this, like, things change, things evolve. They take so many different twists and turns, and one thing leads to another thing. And, you know, wanting to do something innovative, you never really have it mapped out in your mind as an idea anyway. So just kind of working on stuff and seeing where that leads was the sort of strategy that we had in mind. And yeah, it was pretty tense. Like, it was a difficult period when we didn't have an idea of what our company was going to be, but it was also like fun, that uncertainty provided a lot of different directions that we could have gone. And so, yeah, we had a lot of fun with it.
So Reza, so really what you did in the early days was you shipped as much product as you could. Basically, was it around a minimum viable product, ran a series of tests, and then that spawned the ideas then that eventually grew into Shoelace. Is that what would have happened?
Yeah. But you know, I would say that we weren't even actually building full products. In a way, we were building like landing pages and concepts and, you know, framing of certain problems that we thought we might be able to help people with. And we basically like, you know, reaching out to various business owners and just saying like, hey, we're a couple of founders working on stuff. Would you mind sharing your thoughts on what we're building? And so there was a lot more talking to customers than there was like building of product. But the extent to which we were building was like building landing pages, something that would help the people we wanted to speak to visualize the problem or the product direction that we wanted to go after. So I think we actually spent very little time building the actual product out and more like building landing pages and proof of concepts just to be able to have conversations with brands. Yeah, because that's also a danger too, right? If you lock yourself up in a room and just start like writing code, you might end up shipping something that nobody really cares about and you waste a lot of time that way. But if there's something that people can like look at, it could be like mock-ups or screenshots or like just proof of concepts to be able to say, you know, what are your thoughts on this problem? Is this an actual problem for you? How do you think about that? And just something that could be like a conversation starter with brands. We did a lot of that and a lot less of like, okay, let's take a month or 2 months and like ship this actual product and see if someone would use it. We tried to iterate a lot more rapidly by talking to customers as fast as possible.
That's certainly a very efficient way of doing it. There's no doubt about it. I think nowadays, the days of going down the road and actually developing and spending hours and hours and hours developing something, thinking that it's actually going to be successful, they're probably less and less now, unless obviously if you've got a high amount of maybe VC investment initially, that you probably have some money to play with. But your approach is very similar to the way a lot of the Shopify app developers would actually develop apps. They would just conceptualize, you know, multiple different variations of an app and only actually code out and build the final product based on their own views, I suppose, and their own research. So the way you did it fits exactly into that kind of way of doing business. So that's very impressive. Reza, Shoelace intrigues me because over the years, we've been using remarketing techniques from Google and remarketing techniques from Facebook. And unfortunately, Facebook, I think, like a lot of platforms, was never really built for enterprise or, you know, built with a nice GUI so users could easily set things up and get things running. So I believe that your product is removing the pain from a lot of people who have massive potential to retarget their customers, but they just don't maybe have the skill set or the time to actually do it and execute it successfully and properly. And I think the more time you set things up inaccurately, you're really going to end up spending and wasting dollars in the long run. So Can you just give us kind of a summary of exactly what Shoelace does and the pain points that it actually fixes?
Yeah, sure. So I'd say the most important place to start when it comes to Shoelace is our philosophy on how retargeting should be done. To us, we spend a lot more time thinking about that than we do, you know, the actual product or the features or the software. To us, the most important part of what we're doing is to try to help change the conversation around how we do retargeting as marketers in 2019, based on this idea that you ask any consumer these days their thoughts on retargeting, and it's just has become this incredibly annoying experience that consumers are turned off by. And it's become this pretty hilarious situation that all of these brands are spending lots of money and ultimately just like annoying their customers. And in our view, is just like, there's no way that is how the future should be. And, you know, we've been talking a lot about this concept of like journey retargeting or customer journey retargeting, which is the different approach of, instead of showing people the same ad over and over again, why don't we make the ad experiences more memorable, more engaging, more like we're telling a story, to basically take people through a sequence of ad experiences that help tell the brand story, that help build stronger emotional connections with customers, that fit a more kind of broader brand strategy that goes, you know, beyond just trying to like make sales on Facebook ads, but we want to kind of, how do we build an iconic brand that lasts for decades, that has loyal customers that buy from us repeatedly? And frankly, I think that is probably starting to become the only way that brands can survive in a world where the cost of acquiring customers through paid marketing has gone through the roof. It's the brands that are figuring out longevity. It's the brands that are figuring out repeat purchase and lifetime value. It's those brands that are kind of having the competitive edge these days that are able to have a place in the world that they can exist and build their businesses. And so based on that worldview, we're very much trying to take the approach of retargeting journeys that help build those kinds of emotional connections and tell the brand story. And so the foundation of Shoelace, I know I spent a lot of time just talking about that part of it, but to us, it's a really, really big deal. And it's everything that we do at Shoelace, the offering, the product, is based on being able to facilitate that approach to retargeting and bring that to life. And happy to walk you through a little bit more detail on how we do that. But that's the very important starting point for us.
Yeah, that's good. When you say that, does that mean then that you're only talking then to large brands, or do small to medium businesses that are, you know, doing 100K or 200K a year, 300K a year, do they get that philosophy and do they understand it? Or are they under so much pressure, or have they burned so much budget before they ever come to you? Do they hear, you know, that kind of genuine approach that you guys have and that philosophy? Do they appreciate it and understand it?
Yeah, it's interesting, because I think this sort of outlook, I think for sure, is not only reserved for big brands. I think that there's a lot of up and coming brands that have ambitious kinds of aspirations for their businesses that are realizing that the way to win in direct to consumer in 2019 is to take these things really, really seriously. And while they might be, you know, a tiny startup still that only makes a few $100,000 a year in sales, they're taking branding really seriously. They're taking customer experience really seriously. They're taking all these things really seriously because they are, you know, using it as a competitive edge, as a competitive advantage to be able to build their businesses. And I think that definitely there is a vast majority of the brands out there that I think aren't thinking about these things as seriously as they should. And I think that's unfortunate. And it's one of the reasons we try to talk a lot about it. And, you know, we're not the only ones. I think there is my view is that like the last half of 2018, it seemed to be that a big conversation in the ecosystem has been around these concept of like, you know, how do we drive repeat purchase? How do we build loyalty? How do we build community? And how do we do these things, not just because they're warm and fuzzy, but because it's starting to feel like that is the only way for brands to succeed in kind of the Amazon era and in the era of, you know, Facebook ads becoming really expensive. And so I think there is a lag between the people who internalize this reality and are quickly acting on it and those who sort of, you know, vaguely understand that it's important but are finding it difficult to like get their ducks in a row to be able to execute against the strategy. And frankly, my prediction is that most brands will not get this right And it's unfortunate, but those will be the brands that, in my opinion, won't make it to kind of building successful businesses. We're trying to do as much education as we can to help brands take these things seriously. Because there was a time, maybe like 4 or 5 years ago, where, you know, CPMs on Facebook ads were really cheap. You could do like some drop shipping and pour a ton of money on Facebook ads and you'd make a ton of money. I believe those days are over. And, you know, the sooner brands realize that, the better for them, I think, and they can adapt to the realities of the new times that we live in, which is, you know, branding and customer experience and lifetime value and repeat purchase and retention and loyalty. And those things are key ingredients that are going to be necessary for succeeding in this era, I believe.
Yeah, it's you're singing the kind of the same tune that a few people have been talking about that I've interviewed in the past. I recently interviewed Adeep Panar. He runs the Conversio app, the email marketing platform for Shopify. And his theory on the world is exactly as you said. You know, if you're in it for the short term gain, you know, just dump your budget in onto Facebook ads or Google AdWords and sell some stock. But if you're in it for the long term, you really have to treat people, you know, with respect and be very careful, you know, how you reach out to them, when you reach out to them, and what kind of medium you use. There's another important factor as well, is that, like, you know, cost per click on AdWords is in some verticals is doubling year on year. So unless you're, you know, a major brand or major corporate where you can just dump your budget and get results, at some point money will run out. So a longer term approach, of course, is to use the approach that you're talking about. And in the Shopify ecosystem, we can see less people spending on AdWords and more people investing in what you've been talking about, or maybe investing in a loyalty program or upgrading their email platform to do exactly what you said. So separate to building your e-commerce store, it's absolutely mission critical if you're going to succeed that you have to be very careful about how you retarget your customers.
Yeah. And so to us, it's like there's a lot of outlook and philosophy in, you know, some of these things that go into what we decide to build at Shoelace. And, you know, it, you know, continuing off the last couple of things that we mentioned, which is like it's becoming mission critical to build a brand, to build loyalty and to build community and to build longevity with your customers, and that it's just not possible anymore to throw money in Facebook ads and have the math work out. Our view is that that coincides pretty nicely with how retargeting needs to evolve to be able to play a role in that broader marketing strategy. So the types of brands that we work with, it's not a huge difference whether they're big or small. It's more around the ones that are a good fit for Shoelace, so the ones that are kind of bought into that philosophy throughout their entire go-to-market strategy. And it's like, okay, if that's how we're building our business, how should our retargeting campaigns be to be able to support that? And well, they should be something that helps, you know, nurture customers along their customer journey. It should be something that helps tell the brand story. It should be something that, based on where the customer is in their buying journey, they'll be able to see ad experiences that are relevant to them at that stage. And so it's just a lot more nuance and complexity than just like running a DPA ad and letting it rip. It's more about like, how do we divide these audiences up based on which stage of the funnel they're in? How likely are they to convert to the next stage? And how do we set up ad experiences that evolve like a story based on the number of days that go on after they've left the site, and also the evolution of where they are in their buying journey? And so like, there's a visualization piece that's pretty critical in Shoelace to be able to see that entire journey and see what ad experiences or people are seeing at various stages of the funnel, so that you can kind of creatively make sure that you're telling the right story. And there's just a lot of automations and integrations under the hood that are able to facilitate this sort of journey creation, so that we can like pull in content from your loyalty programs. We can pull in signals from your email programs and use those experiences to make your retargeting journeys align with the rest of your marketing programs. And so that's where we see a product like Shoelace fitting as like the layer that helps do retargeting journeys in a world where brands are taking it really seriously to tell their stories and to kind of nurture relationships with their customers. Frankly, not just in order to make a sale, but a big part of Shoelace is like, how do we do post-purchase retargeting to be able to nurture that the relationship there beyond just a single purchase, but to be able to drive loyalty and repeat purchase even after a customer has bought a product? Where does retargeting fit there? Basically, from in the entire customer journey when we're doing paid media in order to nurture relationships with customers. We're the sort of platform that helps facilitate that for brands that are looking to adopt that sort of strategy.
Yeah, it's interesting that you mentioned the post-purchase retargeting or post-purchase journey as well, because that's in some cases equally as important, if not more important, because you've invested so much time and energy to actually get the person to make a purchase. So it's just as important to make the investment to make them after they purchased, possibly to make a repeat purchase. So again, you're fully understand where you're coming from. It makes perfect sense. You know, in terms of Shoelace itself, you guys add a human element from your website. If I was just to read off your website, it says that you combine automation and real human experts to create tailored retargeting journeys. When you're onboarding a customer, can you just give us an insight into why Shoelace is different than just an ordinary agency or an ordinary piece of software that would board the customer? You guys are adding a lot of human value there, which I think is very valuable.
Yeah, sure. Happy to speak to that. So, you know, part of what we realized is that, like, we have all these strong opinions around how retargeting journeys should be done. And a lot of times customers will come to us and be like, okay, I buy into this concept, but like, I don't really know where to begin. How should I set up my journeys? How long should it be? How long should it sort of run for? What messaging should I say in each stage of the funnel? And, you know, the way we think about Shoelace long-term is that in this phase of our company life, we want to do a lot of education and helping brands get this right. So we've incorporated a human element very deeply into the product experience, where when you come into Shoelace, it's not just this kind of self-serve experience that you have to just, you know, click buttons and figure it out on your own. There's a dedicated account manager that helps you launch these journeys in a way that helps tell the brand story. So in addition to the kind of software piece, there is a human component that helps set it up. And our view is that, like, the more the ecosystem matures, the more our brands are kind of getting how to do it and figuring out how they want their journeys to run, the more we can create more and more software to help our brands do this sort of thing on their own, and the less they'll need an account manager to kind of do everything for them. But we're there to sort of support our brands. If they need more involvement from us, we're happy to do that. If they kind of fully get it and they want to just fly on their own, that works as well. But I think oftentimes brands buy into the idea and they want to do this sort of journey. And so we just want to make sure that they have all the support they need to be able to implement it as effectively as possible. So that's why we've put a very strong kind of human element into the product offering.
Reza, in terms of you mentioned that you had 40 staff. In terms of those, the roles and responsibilities there, do you have a big development team, or the majority of your staff boarding customers or managing customers? Just explain the setup there in Toronto.
Sure. Yeah. So we have about 30 people, and it's pretty evenly split three ways. A third are roughly kind of account management and client facing roles. A third are engineering development. And then a third are kind of product management or our go to market efforts, our own kind of sales, our own marketing, our own design. So yeah, it's a split pretty roughly that in those three areas.
Do you have any insights in where you think that the kind of retargeting or remarketing industry is going? Is it at risk with ad blockers, and it's just so easy to unsubscribe from an email? You know, we've got GDPR over here, so it's become increasingly difficult in some cases to reach the customer, even though you may have all of their details and they may have made a purchase. Like, in terms of the future of what Shoelace is doing, do you see massive opportunity, or do you see it just becoming more restricted and restricted and restricted, and effectively forcing people down the route of having to use a professional service like your own?
Yeah, so I have a couple of quick thoughts on that. I think one thing that's interesting that's been happening is if you look at the evolution of the kind of generation of consumers that have been coming to the internet. So let's start with, like, baby boomers when they're a little bit older, and Gen X and the first half of millennials. Like, these are groups that were exposed to the internet in the days of dial-up. So, you know, we remember a time where in order to go on the internet, you heard that, like, screeching noise and you had to wait for a few minutes. And if somebody made a phone call, that would destroy your web session. And so, like, getting on the internet in that capacity, it's been such a blessing that I think so many people are grateful for this, like, wonderful gift of the internet. And I think that we, you know, those groups have a higher tolerance to some annoying ad experience. So like seeing a couple of pop-ups or seeing a couple of annoying repetitive ads. Well, we've kind of just been accustomed to that as the cost of the internet, and we're okay with that. But you look at the next generations, like the second half of millennials, early Gen Z and beyond, you know, these are groups that were not only born into high-speed internet, they were born into mobile high-speed internet. And so there is this sort of entitlement or this sort of like higher level of expectation around how this experience should be. You know, perhaps it's a part of taking for granted how phenomenal this thing that we have called the internet is. And I think what that means is that as we prepare for this wave of digitally native consumers becoming the bulk of the market, brands are going to have to learn how to speak to those audiences in a way that can't just use the same strategies that worked on like the Gen X community and earlier. These are folks who like see an ad coming from a mile away. These are people who need to be spoken to in a way that's a lot more authentic, a lot more relatable. And I think that, you know, the brands who get that will be the brands who win. And my suspicion is that there will be no alternative of just like continuing to bombard people with the same annoying ad experiences over and over again. Like consumers will have enough, and it's just not going to be pleasant anymore. Not that retargeting will go away, not that the ad strategy will go away, but it just needs to mature and elevate itself in a way that is a little bit more sophisticated and a more pleasant experience. And I think that it'll be better for the brands, it'll be better for the consumers. And you know, we're hoping to be able to play a role in that and help get us there. And so yeah, it's exciting. We're optimistic about what the future will look like.
Reza, thank you very, very much for your time. And what it might be a good idea maybe to loop back maybe in 9 or 12 months' time to have a look and see where you guys have, how much you've grown by and how many offices you have around the world.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
You've been listening to episode 9 of the Milk Bottle Shopify e-commerce podcast. Thank you so much for taking the time. And remember, all of our podcasts are available on iTunes and Spotify.